If you can take your seat. Thank you. So I have to give you an announcement before starting the next session. Somebody has problem to distinguish the colors of the papers. So they confuse which is purple and which is violet. So purple is the darker and violet is the lighter. This is purple. And violet is this one. Yeah. No. This is purple and this is violet. Okay? So and this is blue and turquoise is this is turquoise and that was blue. Okay? So we will have a deepening course about colors. So yeah, please. Samira Chotti, yellow main hall. Gloria, orange main hall. Patrick, white library. White is the most easy. Yeah. Shamsi, blue dining room. Gelare, purple, the darker. TV room. Clara, lighter, violet, lighter. Terrace. Pune, turquoise, upstairs. The third floor. Payman, pink upstairs. Christina, green upstairs. Okay? It's clear? Okay. The third floor, yeah. We have three rooms in the third floor. So I have a great pleasure to introduce you, Miss dear sweet Bahiye Nakhchavani. And the people that know her from last year are really waiting for this moment, and the others now are have a lot of expectative, because really she's one of the most dynamic speaker that we had. Thank you so much.
Microphone. I have one small thing to ask you, first of all, I apologize to those of you who have not been exposed to my madness before. Those of you who were here last year should have in your papers, if you had kept them, two things. One was the sentences I gave you last year, and the other one was a sheet called The Art of Reading. Have you by any chance forgotten to bring these with you? You have still got them with you? This is amazing! I didn't expect that. Well, in that case, I have really nothing to say, except that those of you who didn't have that, would you kindly raise your hands? Because I was going to suggest that if those of you who did have them but didn't have them this year could possibly be close to the ones who are about to be given them. But if you don't need them, that means everybody will have them. And if you don't mind, if we could get a couple of people to help Noemi pass these things out so that those of you who didn't have the sentences from last year get given them quickly this year as well. In addition to the sentences of last year, and The Art of Reading, which I passed out to you, everybody should have a piece of paper on which you have the sentence of this year, of this week, of this day, and you should have a page which is called a brief chronology, and then there's something on the back side of it, which is called a proviso. Do you have all the... You got that? So this is the equipment we need. We need last year's sentences. We need the art of reading. We need this day's sentence. And we need our brief chronology with its little proviso on the back. Just to catch up, while those of you who are getting your papers are getting your papers, I don't want to waste time because I know we only have until 12:30, right? So we're going to have to work fast and be sure to be finished by 12:30. If I continue to keep talking, somebody has to wave a hand from the back. Shamsi, I trust you. Wave a hand and tell me I've talked too much and it will be an end, because there's no clock in front of you there, me there, okay? I just want to quickly remind those of you from last year and introduce those of you new this year to a simple principle that I will be following in this course, which we will have every day. And that is sort of summed up in that page in front of you called The Art of Reading. Now, The Art of Reading is just my way of introducing to you the extraordinary phenomena of the onions that we're going to be unpeeling as we read the sentences of Shoghi Effendi. In case you hadn't realized, by the way, I am here merely to help us read. That's all we're going to do today. I'm going to be reading with you one sentence each day in the course of this week, reading one of the sentences of Shoghi Effendi. Only because this is the first day and we're catching up a little bit for those of you who weren't here last year, I want to quickly summarize what is going on. Why do we do this? Why did I think it might be useful in such a course as this, where the subject is the Shoghi Effendi, the author of the plans? Why are we introducing sentences into this story? We did it last year. We're doing it this year in anticipation of next year. You know, Shoghi Effendi, as Mr. Nachtavani was telling us, has given us a vision of time. And here in Akuto, we also have a very strong sense of time. We had the privilege of last year. We're in the midst of the joy of this year. And we still have 1 year ahead. And in the year ahead, we're really going to be coming to grips with the language of Shoghi Effendi and his writings. So everything that we've been doing up until now, in terms of my little contributions, are preparation also for plunging into this extraordinary output of Shoghi Effendi's written work. His authorship in this year, as you will see, is going to be the authorship of plans, the authorship of a system of organization on the planet, of cohesion and vision that gives this Baha'i community such an energy to take the administrative order towards that world order to be established. But in the process of doing that, how did Shoghi Effendi reach us? He did so with his letters, with his words, with his books. And he used language to take us into the future, to help us understand the past. So what I do every day is basically introduce us to the art of reading Shoghi Effendi. And that one page, which you will be able to read in your own time, just introduces you to a bare minimum of the different levels that are necessary for you to understand in order to be able to truly suck the juice out of all of these sentences. I wanted to give this idea to you so that, I mean, most of you are perfectly aware of this, but sometimes, especially in our extremely materialistic, extremely pedantically literal-minded society, where everything has to be proven by objective analysis, we quite forget that there is another way of thinking and seeing, which is through the layers of interpretation of words, which goes all the way from the most literal primary level, which is number one, through to the absorption of content, to the understanding of context, to the application of that to your personal self and your own understanding, your subjective view, through that to a poetic and metaphorical understanding of the language, and beyond metaphor and poetry, to an understanding of the archetypes that are being evoked through words, and beyond archetypes, to an understanding of the spiritual dimensions in language. Language is doing all of these things simultaneously and more. And most of the time, we're not aware of it. We're not even thinking of it. Most of the time, we're barely scraping the first level. And I just wanted to remind you that that is one of the ways that you could help yourself understand how deep are you reading, to just check out those different levels of reading. I won't spend any more time on that. But I did want to remind you of the way we did it. And for those of you who were here last year and remember, it began with all. Help us. All. We can reasonably venture to attempt is to strive towards a, am I saying it right? To strive, to obtain a glimpse. Aren't you reading it? Why aren't you coming with me? You're supposed to be saying this with me. To obtain a glimpse of the first streaks of that promised dawn that must, in the fullness of time, that was really slow. Remember, we got to the top of the mountain and it was chase away the gloom that has encircled humanity. Whoa. Language is very melodious. It has rhythm. It has pace. It has purpose, of course. But it's music. And I want you to get infected by the music of Shoghi Effendi in this class. That was the first sentence we began with, and it's on the pages that you've been given, those of you who weren't here last year, which is stapled. And in the course of this week, perhaps we will be reminded of some of those sentences that we met last year that I have gathered together on this page. I've just put four of them together for the students that were not here last year, because I seem to recall I only did actually do four, because I gave four classes. This year, you're going to have to endure me for six times. Now, the next thing I wanted to introduce you to all of you is this thing I call the brief chronology. The brief chronology, I have to explain, is written in the smallest typeface, number 10, because I wanted to fit everything on one page. So you can be sure I've left a lot out. I had to put it all on one page, and the proviso on the back side is telling you everything that's been left out. The art of reading is to also know what is not said. So part of the way we understand how to read is to realize what is not spoken, what is unsaid, what is implied, what is assumed, what is read between the words, all right? So all the time that we're reading these words of Shoghi Effendi, I want you to cast an eye on that most extraordinary chronology of the things that he was writing at the time that he was writing them. And just to give you some brief glimpse of it, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but take a look. 1921, the passing of Abdu'l-Bahá. Shoghi Effendi is the newly appointed guardian of the Baha'i faith, just 24 years old. Can I ask anybody here who is 24 years old? Are you capable, do you think, of translating the will and testament of Abdu'l-Bahá? Imagine, at the age of 24, Shoghi Effendi comes back from Oxford, where he's a student of English, and in that condition of grief and sorrow at the loss of his beloved grandfather, at such a time when he has suddenly put upon his shoulders the whole weight of the ministry that he has to now assume and command and lead the Baha'i world through, he is doing the first thing that is his duty at that time. The first thing he does is to immediately translate the will and testament of Abdu'l-Bahá for all time. Now think of it. For all time, he does it then. Now, I will leave you to try to think of all the different levels of that word time in the context that Mr. Nachtjavani just gave us this morning. For certainly the whole dispensation of Baha'u'llah, and beyond that, we will have another manifestation of God. Will there be reference to that will and testament? Maybe. We're still in the Baha'i cycle, remember. Can you imagine that sense of responsibility at the age of 24 of writing that will and testament of Abdu'l-Bahá, the document he called, remember, the Charter of a Future World Civilization. And those of you that were recalling what that means, world civilization, remember when we were talking about the lesser peace, the greater peace, and the most great peace in recalling the material of last year, we know that we don't get to that world civilization for quite a long time. That's way off the page into the golden age. So that was a document, a charter that he translated off the page even. Just a year later, take a look at those dates. Lenin dies, Russia and Ukraine are poised on the brink of famine, Europe is engulfed in all that economic and political chaos. Do you remember there were the Spartacus killings, Rosa Luxemburg, all of that was going on. All of that chaos unleashed by the Treaty of Versailles, and Hitler was composing Mein Kampf, excuse me, at the same time that Shoghi Effendi was translating the hidden words, the prayers and tablets of Abdu'l-Bahá into English. I thought it would be very helpful for us to try to see what Shoghi Effendi was doing on that integrative line while that disintegrative process was beginning to take place. I mean, wasn't beginning, was already in full hilt, and at this point was becoming more and more obvious. So basically what this little page does is help us keep Shoghi Effendi in his own historical context. Help us understand the power of these words, not only for all time and the Baha'i dispensation, but also within the context of Shoghi Effendi's own historical period. It's very helpful for us to bear that in mind. In particular, in relation to the sentence that I'm going to be looking at today. Just briefly, take a look at what's on the other side of this page. I want you to remember always what is not being included on this page. All the time that Shoghi Effendi was doing these things, all the time he was writing in such circumstances and such conditions, this does not include all the Baha'i World volumes that he was also compiling, all the statistical booklets that he was putting together, or all of his correspondence and his letters to the East. This is only to the West, okay? Nor does it include a record of the steady outpouring of his regular correspondence. Do you remember? He was constantly writing to tiny little individuals, your true brother. This does not include that. Nor even does it include all those stirring messages that he sent year after year during those plans that we're going to discover, that we're going to be hearing about in Mr. Nachtjavani's talks this week, all the way up to and including the 10-year crusade. None of that is included on this one page. And it should also be borne in mind that Shoghi Effendi was writing and translating this literature at such a time, in such circumstances, at the same time that he was constructing the world order of Baha'u'llah on these foundations, and the whole fabric of society was disintegrating around him, at the same time as he was building the Shrine of the Bab. He was acquiring properties on Mount Carmel and in Akka. He was overseeing architectural designs for temples all over the world. He was confronting covenant breakers, and he was protecting the faith from attacks. He was strengthening contacts with government officials and directing national assemblies to do likewise across the planet. And he was meeting and encouraging a flood of pilgrims that were coming to the World Center. All of that he was doing in addition to writing these extraordinary works from which we are taking the sentences and studying them. Now, I have chosen to take sentences from the work that we did last year. So that's the first thing to bear in mind. Every one of the sentences you'll be getting this week come from the material of Akuto 2004. This is a challenge to you, for those of you that need to have your minds refreshed a little bit. Every day you've got to figure out, where did that sentence come from? Which of those talks did it come from? What was the context in which that talk, that quote was given to us by Mr. Nakhchivani last year? And it's quite interesting to keep that in mind. In the beginning, I tried to see whether it was possible to make a direct link between day one last year, day one this year, day two last year. It was impossible. So I decided, forget that. It doesn't matter. We don't have to be quite so rigid. These are from all those talks taken at random and in relation to whatever material it is that we're going to see this year. And I began with the sentence for today, the sentence that was exactly the one that Mr. Nakhchivani ended with. Well, almost ended with. This wonderful sentence beginning such simultaneous processes. Such simultaneous processes. Forget for a minute that anything's in capital letters. Just sort of take a look at it as a sentence, if you don't mind. Before you even begin to read it, take a look at where it comes from, down at the bottom in tiny, tiny writing. It comes from Advent of Divine Justice. Take a look at your brief chronology. When was Advent of Divine Justice written, and to whom? Can anybody find it before me? 1938-39. Now, I've included in that wonderful cable of Shoghi Effendi that uses those words so powerfully and poetically, as shades of night descending, imperiled humanity inexorably deepening. We all know what was happening in 38-39. It was a vital turning point in the history of Europe. And all of us here, one way or another, whether we are of European stock or we are recent comers to Europe through generations, we've all, as a result of our European culture, been marked by what happened in 1939. During that very moment, Shoghi Effendi writes his longest ever general letter. Those are the long letters that he wrote. The Advent of Divine Justice, addressed to the Baha'is of the United States and Canada. So there you have various important elements. The time and who it's addressed to. We're going to be talking about plans that were first made through the United States and Canada, first given to the United States and Canada, and then later expanded across the world. In last year's talks, you remember, Mr. Nakhchivani spent a whole day speaking about the role of the American Baha'i community. And in our refresher course yesterday, we were reminding ourselves of what that meant and what the meaning of the word America, America's the West. Do you remember all those distinctions? Please, if you don't remember, this is the moment to be reminded and to go back in your studying and realize the connection between last year's material and this. The fact that we are studying the plans of Shoghi Effendi this year is directly linked to the role of America in the world. And this particular sentence that we start with this week comes from that book, that general letter, The Advent of Divine Justice, addressed to the Baha'is of America, of the United States and Canada. And just at that same time, of course, Hitler invades Poland on one side, Stalin invades it from the other. We've got the Soviet troops occupying Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. I decided to include those cities, those countries, because I knew that we had amongst us, how many Latvians, Estonians, please raise your hands, Lithuanians, do you realize that you are part of this history? That Shoghi Effendi was writing this letter at a time when your own culture and history was affected. And so therefore you're implicated in the very words that he has written. We have Czechoslovakia capitulating. World War II is declared that very year. And that is the time when Shoghi Effendi writes this remarkable letter addressed to the United States and Canada. And at that time, this is the sentence, this is the one I pulled out. This is what he says. Such simultaneous processes of rise and fall, of disintegration, of integration and of disintegration, of order and chaos, with their continuous and reciprocal reactions on each other, are but aspects of a greater plan, one and indivisible, whose source is God, whose author is Baha'u'llah, the theater of whose operations is the entire planet, and whose ultimate objectives are the unity of the human race and the peace of all mankind. Now, you notice that I took the liberty of writing out this sentence in a rather fancy way. I did it because I wanted you to see what the language was doing. This is not just a sentence of words going plod, plod on the page. We were just talking about the British Baha'i community being described as Shoghi Effendi as plodders. And I said, yes, but their language doesn't plod. The English language leaps, it bounds, it flies. And when it's in the hands of a master like Shoghi Effendi, and it pulls us with it, we have no idea where it's going to take us. You know, language, any language, not just the English language, we all know because we have our mother tongues, and they all do the same thing. They have one thing in common. They move in space and time. Language moves in space and time. It's not a static thing. We may get the illusion it's static because we have books and words sit there calmly, quietly, surreptitiously, subversively silent on the page. But beware of them. They're trembling. They're getting ready to bounce at you, to reverberate through your brain neurons, to set all kinds of associations at work. This is not such a safe thing, these little black marks on the page. Language moves through space and time. And we've had a glimpse today of the way in which Shoghi Effendi and his language gives us a new vision of time. But as the week progresses, I promise you that you will realize that his language is also giving you a whole new definition of space. Planetary space for this particular dispensation. But who knows what kind of space it might become. I recently discovered that in astrophysics, there are all kinds of interesting theories about the universe and how it begins and where it stretches to and what. And there are these wonderful ideas about membranes. Have you heard about universal membranes? That there are alternative universes that exist simultaneously in time and space. Whoa. And they kind of stretch like a kind of infinite membrane. And you can go through a wormhole or a black hole or some kind of hole, and you can suddenly go into another one. I was thinking, as Mr. Nachshavani was speaking about those different definitions of cycles and time. Shoghi Effendi, in his talk this morning that he was telling us, Shoghi Effendi gave us at least three definitions of epochs and ways of looking at time. At least three. If there are three, my dears, there could be 3,000. The universe of God is infinite in its magnitude. We are very limited in our capacity to understand it. And certainly in this dispensation, three, frankly, is almost more than enough. I can't cope with any more, can you? Think of thinking of time in three layers simultaneously all the time. That's what he's asking us to stretch our imagination to do. And he will do that also in terms of space. So language moves through time and space, and the ideal way of giving you this sentence would actually be to start somewhere at the end of the hall, there, where that flip chart is, and move with the words going up and down all the way across the wall here to the other side, so that you begin to see it actually moving in space. Instead of this illusion of verticality on the page, we should really be following the words in this direction, or if we were Persian, in that. Because it's by understanding them in terms of space that you also begin to see how they relate to one another. And if they have this look on the page that I've given them, it's because it helps us at least get it into our heads, because our imagination is actually bigger than a page, thank God. so that once we've got it on the page and we begin to actually see it in our minds, we begin to understand it in its other dimensions. Mr. Nachavani was asking whether or not we needed to have that piece of paper that showed those famous two curves and the third dotted line. Remember that? He said, maybe we should get a copy of it and brought to everybody. I looked at Noemi and I said, don't worry about it, Noemi. We don't need another 100 copies of that. You know why? Because that picture, that image is embedded in our imaginations ever since last year. There is no one in this room who hasn't been marked by those two curves and the dotted line. I guarantee you, we don't need it on the paper. It's branded on our hearts. It's been so helpful to see those two lines, and I want you to hold them in your mind now as we begin to read this sentence together. I thought that one of the ways in which we could look at each one of these sentences was to also grab one word just to start with, because the first and most primary duty of any reader of Shoghi Effendi is to understand the language. So we begin in all humility with our socks on the floor, and we look up the words in the dictionary. We're all on common ground there. There are always words we don't know. And even if we think we know the meaning of those words, when we look them up, we discover layers of other meanings and other synonyms around those words. And so I decided that maybe the first word we needed to look at, I wonder whether I've got the right word here. Maybe you have to tell me whether this is the right word. How can I judge this? If you just take a look at that sentence quietly for just 2 seconds and then decide for yourself privately which would be the first word that you would want to just make sure you've understood, okay? Such simultaneous processes of rise and of fall, of integration and of disintegration, of order and chaos, with their continuous and reciprocal reactions on each other, are but aspects of a greater plan, one and indivisible, whose source is God, whose author is Baha'u'llah, the theater of whose operation is the entire planet, and whose ultimate objectives are the unity of the human race and the peace of all mankind. Have I got the right word? I chose the word reciprocal. Is that okay? Of course, you can look up other words too, but I just chose that for starters. I chose that because I think that it helps us understand the sentence as well. What does that word mean? When you look up that word, you see that it has a variety of different fanning meanings that go in different... I mean, they're all concentric circles. You'll notice that everything about this talk, this sentence, and this morning is about circles, cycles, circles. Rising, falling, rising, falling. If we'd started from that end and come, we'd be going like this. You know those wonderful... These are the extraordinary metaphors that come to your mind as you begin to listen to these words of Shoghi Effendi. The word reciprocal could mean interrelated, interconnected, interdependent, those of you that were here yesterday, interacting. It also means corresponding, correlated, complementary, co-equal, equivalent. It also means answering, question, answer, alternating, vice versa, back and forth, to and fro, seesaw. These are the different implications in that word, reciprocal. Now you understand why I chose it for this sentence as the mystery word? Because if you take a look at the way that sentence comes out on the page, what do you notice? First of all, remember from last year, our first job as readers, after we've looked up the words, so I should say our second job as readers, is to figure out where is the main sentence here. Because you remember, Shoghi Effendi writes in highly complex phrases and clauses. Every one of his sentences is a construction made of parts that link together, that interrelate. And we have to get through this forest and ask ourselves, wait a minute, where's the spine of the sentence here? Where does everything hang on to? What is the central pivotal line of thought here? You have to go directly to that first. You have to be able to recognize it. And once you've got it, you can begin to understand all the other aspects of the sentence. And what is it in this one? I have put it in capital letters for you, so that you can begin to see what it is that Shoghi Effendi is actually, in all simplicity, telling us. He's saying such simultaneous processes are but aspects of a greater plan. That's what he's saying. And if you want to really pare it down to the bare bones and take away all the extraneous words that help you understand it in more complex ways, take away the adjectives. Such processes are but aspects of a plan. Now, we had this morning that clear vision through Mr. Natavani's analysis of the major and the minor plans of God. What Shoghi Effendi is telling us in this sentence is that these simultaneous processes of rise and fall. Now, do we look at the dotted line rise or the line of the minor plan of God, which is the Baha'i community's rise? We look at the lower line, certainly with disintegration. I don't know at which point I'm misinterpreting Shoghi Effendi here, but I have a feeling that he's saying almost both the major and the minor plans of God are, am I wrong, but aspects of a, excuse me, greater plan? You mean there's another major beyond the major that we've seen? I want us to have that as a possibility, because all through the writings of Baha'u'llah, we keep seeing emphasis on orbs, on circling around. There's that wonderful prayer of the fast, which we will have the privilege of reading in just a week's time, in which he speaks about those, those who circle around them. It's not blessed. I should have looked it up. I didn't do my homework. I beg your pardon. It's one of the longer prayers of the fast in which he speaks about the people of Baha. These are those who. And then he speaks about them and those who circle around them. I will promise to find by tomorrow, excuse me. There may be a copy of the prayers and meditations that I can look it up in this evening, and then I'll remind you. But basically, it's a question of orbiting. It's satellites within satellites, the planet with its moons and satellites orbiting around it, it itself orbiting around the sun orbiting around goodness knows what powers of the galaxies. We begin to understand what it is that we're seeing in the vision of Baha'u'llah, where we've got the manifestation of God, we've got that sunburst, that starburst of the manifestation. We have then that figure, that mysterious figure of Abdu'l-Bahá, who is sometimes referred to as the moon in relation to the sun of Abdu'l-Bahá, of Baha'u'llah, who reflects the light rather than he isn't the source of the light, he is the reflector of the light. You have the satellite of Shoghi Effendi. You begin to see that in this faith there is this constant reference to our relationship to orbit. And at the core of it all, at the center of it all, in our privileged times, we realize that this is what we mean by the covenant. This is what we are orbiting around. This is the pivot of unity that is promised for this dispensation. That as long as we keep that focus, that orbit at the center of our lives, there will be no schism, there will be no division, there will be no separation in this cause. So, to go back then to the simultaneous processes are but aspects of a greater plan. What that greater plan is, I leave to your imagination. I know that it includes the major plan. It's certainly the major plan is part of the greater plan. Whether it's also the minor plan, which is obviously part of the major plan. I mean, minor comes below major, doesn't it? And then there are other mysterious forces. Do you remember that wonderful sentence that we had last year? Mysteriously, slowly, and resistlessly, God accomplishes his design. Though the sight that meets our eyes in this day be the spectacle of a world hopelessly enmeshed in its own, hopelessly entangled in its own meshes, utterly careless of the voice which for a century has been calling it to God, and miserably subservient to the siren voices. Do you remember those sibilant S's? Miserably. Do let me hear you say it. Miserably subservient to the siren voices which are attempting to lure it into the vast abyss. Now notice how Shoghi Effendi's first three words, such simultaneous processes. It's very hard, isn't it, to distinguish when you're in the middle of all those S's. Which is the line of integration and which is the line of disintegration? It's very difficult to be able to define the difference between rise and fall, chaos and order, when you're in the middle of that sibilance. We were talking with, was it Anis? Where is he? Where is he? Yes, and the Greek church. Yes. At what point do even the most corrupt institutions of our world, which are in the process of disintegrating, appropriate the visionary principles of the faith of Baha'u'llah for their own uses, and it looks on the surface as if they're doing something very open-minded, and you just know that that new wine is going to crack that old bottle in no time. That the very fact that they are using the vision of Baha'u'llah to try to give themselves cosmetic surgery is in fact an element, a sign of the disintegrative process. But in another way, it looks like it's a sign of the integrative process, doesn't it? It's the sign of the influence of Baha'u'llah's revelation on the planet. It's a way of looking at that dotted line. So in some ways, what Shoghi Effendi seems to be indicating in those first three words is that in the beginning, certainly in the beginning of the sentence, because we're beginning to read it and we've just hit it, such simultaneous processes, we're not absolutely 100% sure of the difference. But look what he immediately does. He gives us these distinctions: rise and fall, integration and disintegration, order and chaos. Now, this is a very seesaw kind of sentence, isn't it? Right from the very beginning. Such simultaneous processes. Remember that the of phrase, we're immediately entering into a defining, qualifying phrase. Actually, if you look at it, it's three phrases, isn't it? Of rise and fall, of integration and of disintegration, of order and chaos. You could further break it down, of course. You could just take each single word of rise and of fall, of integration and of disintegration. But Shoghi Effendi has got our minds already working in terms of seeing them as a seesaw by putting them with that and. I really should have put the word and right in the middle. I should have put of rise, space, and of fall. Of integration, pause, and of disintegration. Because that's a conjunction, and that's at that pivot point. We get the full weight of those two phrases on the two sides of that conjunction. So you can't easily break them apart. They're conjoined. And they force you to work like this as you read the sentence. Your mind thinks in terms of a seesaw. And you see that it's the simultaneity of this process is also inviting you to do that. He's not saying a static process. He's saying it's simultaneous. And it's a process. A process can't be static. What am I saying? Process is movement, isn't it? Process immediately involves movement. Mr. Nachavani was drawing our attention to the word coincide and the distinction between coincide and synchronize. It's not only that they are in time, actually both are in time. You coincide in time, you synchronize in time. The difference is actually a point coinciding and a process synchronizing. A point is a moment in time. A process is a continuum. Okay? So what he's giving us is already movement there. So we are forced to see that seesaw in continuous movement. Such simultaneous processes of rise and of fall, of integration and of disintegration. And the sentence causes you to do this balancing act. Your eye, as well as your mind, is being asked to keep those two things constantly in balance. The minute you say rise, you have to go into the fall. The minute you say fall, you have an integration. The minute you have integration, you have disintegration. Disintegration leads to order. Order leads to chaos. In fact, it's not just seesaw. Do you see what's happening? It's actually a circle, isn't it? But it's a circle that's not static. It's what I was... This is a moving circle. What happens when you have a moving circle? You go forward. Yay! It's a wheel. My friends, we have arrived at that moment in history when we've discovered the principle of the spiritual wheel. Up until now, we have been spiritual Neanderthals, hunters and gatherers. We may have finally entered the new epoch, the era of Baha'u'llah, in which we finally figured that if you have a hub to the center, and if you have spokes that go out to a circumference that unites everyone, there are two things that unite, therefore. The hub, which is the core, which is the covenant. And then you have another circle wider than that hub, which connects all our different points of view, all our different methods of doing things, all our different cultural perspectives, all our different histories, our geographies. But we're united in action. That's what that wheel is doing. It carries us forward or backward. But forward, let's concentrate on forward for the time being. So everything here is indicating a cycle, a circle, a wheel that is moving us forward through rise and fall, integration, disintegration, order and chaos. Now we come to that wonderful middle line. It's a chaos, and that phrase, with their continuous and reciprocal reactions on each other. In a way, everything that we just put in that top of the rise and fall, the seesaw, is a whole box. Because it's three phrases that are connected together. They're synonymous phrases. Rise is the same as a kind of integration, which is the same as a sort of order. Fall is implying disintegration, is implying chaos. So those three sets of phrases are acting together synonymously in one big clump to give you the idea of what those processes are. Okay? They're telling you about the processes. Three adjectival phrases working in unity and in synonymous unity to give you an idea of what those processes are about. And then when you get to with their continuous, it's telling you another adjectival phrase about the processes. It's processes with their continuous and reciprocal reactions on each other. Now, you'll notice that I've spaced the words out on the page. And I did that so that you could, with your delicate pens, draw that wonderful combination of rise and fall, integration and disintegration, going all the way through those words so that you can physically see in front of your eyes that wheel beginning to move. Because if these words are moving forward, if these processes are moving forward, there are these two things that happen simultaneously as well. One is the continuity of each of those elements with each other. In other words, there's a continuity between rise and fall, between fall and integration, between integration and disintegration. There is also a reciprocity. a relationship and in an answering to the question, a toing and a froing and all the other synonyms that I told you about before. Now that continuity is quite important. Take a look just in our recent times. Those of you who were with me over the refresher course, please forgive me, but I was very much influenced by what happened over the tsunami crisis in the world. I was much struck by how this particular element of chaos, because that's what it was chaos. It's hard to say that an earthquake under the ocean is disintegration, because that was obviously not a human event. It was a chaotic moment. And take a look who was impacted. Do you remember that extraordinary set of quotations that Mr. Nachtavani just put up on the board about the chess game? That Baha'u'llah moves the pawns? These people in the Indian Ocean were among the pawns in his hands. They hadn't done anything wrong. They were pawns in his game. And this is a very serious game, because there was a continuity between the chaos that affected their lives and the extraordinary rise of response in the world. Now, how that rise was put into effect and whether it led to corrupt misuse of all that is also part of the fall, which will in turn lead to more integration, because we very well know that it's going to lead to a deeper and more mature version of the United Nations. Even in our own days, we've seen that happen. As a result of the attacks on Kofi Annan, we're having a reassessment and a re-evaluation of the workings, the internal workings of the United Nations. It hasn't happened. It isn't finished. It's in the process of happening. But this is a way in which we have to be able to understand that no matter how that disintegration seems to affect us, it's leading in continuity to a rising, to a new order, to a new form of integration in the world around us. That word continuous is what that's about. In other words, there is no break, there is no cut, there is no sudden full stop in the logic. Now God's doing this, then he folds his hands and he goes over there and he does that. There is a connection between all of these elements. The reason I think I was so moved by this question of the tsunami was that I saw a beginning, a glimmering in the minds of those of us who were responding, all the way from tiny little responses of giving €1 to real efforts on the international scale of trying to think of, okay, that means we'd better have an early warning system in the Indian Ocean. Why hadn't we done it before? We begin to realize, my goodness, we have a responsibility for the condition of the lives of people on the other side of the planet. We don't just think within our national boundaries and whether or not it's the west coast of the United States that's going to get the information about earthquakes and tidal waves. We think about what's going to happen to the people of the Maldives Islands. They are as important to us as anybody here. Why? For the time being, because we may have to pull our money out of our pockets if we don't look after them to begin with. It's not at all altruistic. We're not even yet in the proper lesser peace. Remember, our motives are totally contaminated. But nevertheless, these are the glimmerings. This is the dotted line. These are the signs of that integrated process at work. And it is continuous. There is a logical connection between these things. And we're in the process of unfolding that logic. The reason I like to talk to you about Shoghi Effendi's sentences as a way of understanding the world order is because every sentence depends on logic to be understood. A sentence, a language, moves in time and space with sequential logic. So as we understand the logic, we realize the continuity, we begin to get the meaning. Language itself becomes the vehicle to help us understand very large and mysterious processes. Language is the tool by which we can understand the invisible. And the process that he's describing is, to all intents and purposes, largely invisible. We see signs of it. We see effects. The cause is always mysterious. We cannot touch it. And the only way we can come anywhere close to understanding it is through a real command of the language itself. We begin to see that continuity and the reactions on each other. Now let's get back to the main sentence. Wow! Do you see what I did? I beg your pardon. I think your eye can tell you what the rest of that sentence is doing. You see how the sentence discovers its pivot at the end? After giving us the seesaw, when we come to that greater plan, and Shoghi Effendi is giving us the phrases to define what that greater plan is, he makes it very clear. It's a plan one. This is not seesaw on two sides. One and indivisible, whose source is God. Put a circle around these words. One, source, author, theatre, objectives. Those are all the things that come in line. And then put another line under invisible, God, Baha'u'llah, planet, unity, peace. You'll begin to see how the pattern he sets up in the very beginning of the seesaw is repeated, but in a single column of meaning at the bottom. The whole thing is resting on a pivot of meaning which has at its source God, as its author, Baha'u'llah, as the theater of whose operations is the planet, and whose ultimate objectives you have unity and peace. Unity of the human race, peace of all mankind. There are many ways in which this sentence can be explored, and I beg your pardon for spending too much time with a tsunami, but God willing, we will have more chance to get deeper with other sentences tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So did you see how it's impossible to forget the sentences that Bahie is analyzing with us? So I saw a lot of people from last year, always you remembered the last year sentences. Isn't it? Yes, yeah. Okay, so we have now, we have our lunch time. And we will see at 4 o'clock here for the plenary session. I want to remind you that in the third floor there is a room, is a prayer room, and is open 24 hours a day. And so every time you want to have some private time for your private prayer, you can use it. Thank you. So somebody asked from the fun box, we can organize that, because we didn't organize the fun box, we can organize that. Okay? So, please.
Something due any day, I will know right away, soon as it shows.